Değerli Sayın Taşıtaş, Eğitimler'e konuş inanmış, sizi de öğretici ağırlığa sürücü baktığında. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, today I want to read briefly a new addition to the Vedic series. And of course our schedule was that I'll stop somewhere around 2:30 or so. And the devotees should take prasadam. And right at 3 o'clock I'll be leaving to go to the airport. And those who can, they should try to come with us. We'll be checking in at Northwestern. This is Dallas Airport. Northwestern flight is going to Amsterdam. We'll give you the number of that flight later. Also, we thank the devotees who went with us yesterday to the function. It's a little unusual. For many people, Diwali is more of a fun kind of engagement, celebration. And so there was a little bit of issue that there was some of the organizers didn't want any philosophical input. In other words, they didn't want to have to think about certain commitments or responsibilities or whatever. It's kind of more cultural fun sort of thing. But of course, Prabhupada's mission was that we always should reflect on what is the nature of our position in this material world, what is the nature of the duty, the living entity, or the ultimate situation. So, but it's good that we can be able to move in and out of many different types of circles. Some cases direct preaching, some cases planting seeds, some cases it's observing and speaking as well. But in every case, a Vaishnava is supposed to be mission-oriented and consider how to maximize the effect because you never know who is in the audience, who is listening, who is participating, who may be participating, and what effects it can have on someone. Also, I said as I come back, I'll be traveling most likely a lot more. I'll come back on the 24th. We'll stay for one day, and then even on the 25th, I'll be going to Australia and New Zealand. I'll probably be there for about 10 days. I'll come back for about a week or two, and then I'll go to Suriname, and after that I'll see where I travel. And I think later I'll try to wait until we go to India before I start doing additional travels. So we ask those who are working on the publication and the book projects and things to do what they can do so that it'll be timely when I'm back, and I can have a schedule of some things that'll be pending, and I can try to work on those things and schedule in. Otherwise, I will take what situations come first, and that's what I'll adhere to. It's like right now, I had a tremendous problem in the last 5 days, actually last week, just trying to adjust my schedule because I was supposed to be in 4 different places. Somehow all the things were coming around the same time. But to go to Brazil, and South Africa is having this Ratiyatra. So they wanted me to kind of come back. So I was trying to see if there was a way I could do Brazil, South Africa, West Africa, of course, first, and then go from there straight to Australia, to the Suriname, and come back. But it's a little bit complex, but it's cheaper to come all the way back here, and then go to Australia. And so I postponed a trip to Brazil. We'll see about that later. And we had talked to devotees about particularly increasing their devotion. Yesterday we had a very intense discussion about closer investigation on some of the problems that the world is facing. And we looked at it from a very sort of esoteric aspect, but we felt the need that we should be a little clear about just what is going on, why certain things are going on, and why the problems are far greater than what people normally perceive. And we emphasize that due to some of those things, there will be an increase in our mission and work that we have to do. And so we're just preparing you so that you will be more sensitive to those things. As you will know, that there's much more tax will be there. You will have much more trouble if you're not being very strict in your sadhana. We will have one second. And when they come for the offering, they should come under the camera. All of this will be off camera. Excellent. You can edit this out until I start on this. And I just warn some devotees that they should expect that in the near future, there will be so many more challenges that one will be confronted with because of its nature of neutral energy. And as the sinful factors increase, it means it naturally assaults the devotion. And because there is such massive intrusion of tyrants and demon-oriented personalities, and because so much of now what we understand as a material world is really deteriorating and crumbling, and so it's very significant that we preach like anything, because after about 4 or 5 years it's going to be almost impossible for a while to preach to people, because people will just be so captured, bewildered, and so programmed, and their musings will be such that it will be hard for them to get a real sensitive spiritual subject matter. So whatever has to be done a little quickly. So. Okay, so today I want to talk about the conception of eating, mating, sleeping, and defending. It's something that everybody does in material bodies and in all of the material universes. Yesterday we talked a little bit about the extraterrestrial energy phenomena. And everyone will be talking about that more, so it's becoming almost commonplace. You see such things on television, such things in the movies, books written about such. Different people are, you know, speaking about certain things that they've experienced, they've heard, etc. And as we look at what it means in having mature bodies, then we also draw some notice on, well, what is the difference then? If, materially speaking, there is always the struggle for survival. Materially speaking, there's always the anxiety in how to arrange for one's maintenance. Then, what is the difference spiritually? Because we also know that the spiritual involvement, transcendental involvement, is not void of these activities. Not that, okay, so generally speaking, we do so many things, so much variety, so much variegatedness, so many attempts in trying to make things happen, and it's struggling. And so spiritual life means, okay, no more of that. Now we're just free from stuff. Of course, that is kind of a voidistic or sometimes impersonalistic conception. That exchanges, interactions bring pain, therefore the ultimate must be to be free of all of these things. But we understand that spiritual life is not the opposite of something. It's mature. I was the opposite of anything. It is the real thing itself. Therefore, if it's the real thing, then what are the qualities, the attributes, and the involvements, and the relationships thereof? So, of course, in transcendental knowledge, we appreciate that really the spiritual is the real, the material is just a reflection, but perverted reflection. So therefore, we understand that all of these things are happening perfectly, spiritually speaking. Not that they're not happening, but they're happening, perfectly. Sometimes people would make some inquiries to devotees because they see that as we have many projects all around the world, some of them are quite opulent. Our projects in Bombay is some of the most choice land in the whole of India, the whole of Bombay. We have cinema and a 5-star hotel, accommodations, and even the movie stars like to use some of our facilities for some quality. And in Los Angeles, we have recording studios and so many things. And so one may think, well, what does it have to do with spiritual life? Or even in Mayapur, we're building a spiritual city itself. And so many other projects, whether it's radio stations or television stations, things that are part of the devotee music community. And then sometimes, as a Swami or Guru speaking, then people wonder, well, you're spiritual, then why are you using a watch, or why are you using the radio, or why are you using a microphone? You know, have some idea that something spiritual is the opposite of material, is the avoidance of material. But of course it's a matter of consciousness. So we want to look at that theme as we share this with you. But this is a different look at eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Today, my spiritual master had a very special lesson for me to learn. I had been feeling very bewildered in trying to more deeply understand transcendental realities. Somehow my intense confusion caused him to give special attention to my concerns. He appeared before me and said, "My dear son, please accompany me on a voyage. Simply listen and observe, my child. Listen and observe." He appeared before me and said such. He took me into the ocean where we observed a very unusual civilization. At first I was very afraid. Yesterday I mentioned how there are civilizations and entities within the oceans. Well, the living entities within the center of this particular planet. They were speaking a strange language, but by his mercy, I was able to understand it. All of their conversations and activities were about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. My guru then took me into the inner core. Next, he took me into the inner core of this earth plane. I had no idea that there was another civilization of a total different species living so close to human civilization. But many people already know, but people will find out in the near future about how many other types of beings are part of just this universe, even associated with this planet. I had no idea that there was another civilization of a total different species living so close to human civilization. At first I thought, how is it that these beings are so much a part of the Earth's ecosystem and we know nothing of them? My spiritual master, of course, hearing my thoughts, said there are many who know of them very well. However, remember, you are to listen and observe. Their speaking and activities were all centered around eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He said to me, "Study quickly, for we have thousands of environments to visit." As Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam explains to us, there are 8,400,000 different living entities. And that means that 8,400,000 different types of physical bodies that the soul can enter into. And they're not just in this planet or even this universe. They are so many different places. And so all of those bodies, the soul is there. And all of those 8,400,000 bodies are bodies that are part of the experience of incarceration. Bodies that are designed according to consciousness, that's in relationship to the desire to be away from the Lord, that is independent, desire to lord over to a certain extent what one surveys. So many different types of bodies that are there. And so some of those bodies now are people are hearing about in some places within this galaxy and some other places, and they talk about extraterrestrials, etc. Or there's been recent discoveries, especially in the last 3 years, these 3 or 4 major shocking discoveries, that there is another planet that's near us, that's within our solar system, and that there have been shocking discoveries even in the last couple of months, that there is distinct evidence that there is also life of the universes, of the planets. And so this kind of knowledge will again come out more, because a lot of it is already there, and it will gradually be made more available to the public. The body features of the beings were very grotesque. This is, now we went to several lower planets, And so we're saying the bodies were extremely looked at. It's like our bodies we have here. By some beings on higher heavenly planets, we look like monsters. The activities that we perform are like gross. Where we eat, where we defecate, even our thoughts and things are like gross. Like they said, we would find the activities of residents of some of the lower planets to be grotesque, frightening, somewhat disturbing. We can see that in one sense it's relevant to the environment. I was afraid if they saw us, they would do us harm. But Srila Gurudev said, listen and observe. Afterwards, we went to the middle and higher planets in this universe. And then later we visited other universes. I had never seen so much opulence, heard so many different languages, observed people so intensely engaged in so many different programs for eating, sleeping, mating, and food. It's like even here on this one planet, even this continent, according to the cultural idiosyncrasies, people eat differently and sleep differently, in some cases defend and mate differently also, according to culture, so even within this same small realm. Like some people, they actually eat rats, some people eat snakes, some people eat dogs and cats, some people eat fried grasshoppers and sugar-coated easy roaches. Some very wealthy people and very exquisite restaurants, so-called, serve us some of these things. And of course, those like yourselves, strict vegetarian. And so we see even from different initial environment, and some who are vegetarians and some are vegans, and some are microbiotic, and some eat only raw. So we see that even within our small realm, the tremendous variegatedness that's there. And so to see something so outside of that, extremely outside of that, be rather shocking. It was so, I had never seen so much of this in opulence. Observe people so intensely engaged in so many different programs. For eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It was fantastic. In the higher planets, each higher abode seemed more exciting than the previous. Several times I wanted to ask my spiritual master if I could remain there, if I could stay here. He would simply repeat, listen, and observe. My spiritual master then allowed me to perceive all of these environments at once. It was shocking. It says, we read the Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna shows his universal form. Our Mother Yasoda looks in his mouth, she sees all the universes. So at some point, Arjuna is given the vision by Krishna to see past, present, and future, to see life on all different dimensions. So it's a matter of perception that can be given. Or we make the prayers that our eyes have been closed. That one's eyes, is covered. But by the mercy of the spiritual master, the eyes become open. One becomes able to see, to perceive, to understand. To see what's accessible, what's there. But when the eyes is closed, then we interfere with what we were not able to have that perception because of the covering of the eyelids. So, here's similar. Spiritual Master then is giving some special benediction, blessings to see. First taking one environment to the next, and then later allowing the Chela disciple to see so many environments all at the same time. Get a very intense realization and grasp on what is happening. It was, yes, everyone, all the environments were intensely and all the people in the environments were intensely involved in pursuing and making arrangements for the same thing: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But this time, I noticed how monotonous that this was. Sometimes when we are just seeing things in a moment, we don't realize how it's connected with other things or how mundane, mechanical, monotonous it is. You know, one of the problems today is people don't have time to think, or when they do have time to think, they don't have time to think outside of their normal paradigms. So therefore, they're still kind of seeing things based on what the immediate environments are. Like many times we have some problem, something's happening in our life, we don't quite see it because we're so close to it. Someone who is a little outside, able to see and give us some insight, some encouragement, some guidance, etc. So similarly, there is a need for the spiritualist to be able to evaluate the immediate environments, to see the study and process, but also to go outside of just the orthodox paradigm and to try to look a little closer, be more scrutinizing, and to try to see how something connects with something else. I think they're complementary. Look at the implications, ramifications of various activities. The childish move is just to do things and not to be concerned about what the outcomes will be. And that's a problem. But more we are mature, maturely and spiritually, we are even thinking before we do something, what will this produce? What will happen based on this? What will be the effects? So this time I noticed I noticed how monotonous this was. I have to put in so much energy into these things, the ultimate results. We saw all this happening at once. Ultimate results was disease, old age, and death. It didn't matter what in the universe, what material planet. That eating, sleeping, mating, defending was going on, and the end result was old age, disease, death. Even the animals were actually following the very same routine. So some planets, the living entities may be living hundreds and sometimes thousands of years longer, but still the result is still the same. They still have to leave the body. In some places people may be eating one type of diet, some other places another type of diet, the same thing. Some places, the entities may have been defending only with their hands. Other places, very sophisticated weapons, but the same things. The same with mating. I felt so sorry for all of these entities, as they all seem so unaware about the outcome and futility of their efforts. It all seems so dry and meaningless. We've all seen it sometimes. We watch somebody else. We notice it, the routine that they go through. We wonder, can't they see this, how much they're boxed into a certain pattern? The one is absorbed and such, they may not see themselves. He said, we would look at the animals. You know, some of you may have went to the zoo and you studied the animals a little bit, or you went to game forests, or you've been in countries where there's animals that are wild and run around. And if you can observe them, you'll see this, you know, this routine. That they're sleeping, they can sleep so long, and then they get up to find something to eat, and then they're defending, and if possible, you know, they're trying to mate. And it's the cycle goes on. Some of you who have pets, you watch the pets, and you notice, you know, the routines. But we don't think so much about our own lives as being routine. It's a routine. And how it would be so dry if we were looking at it from a higher perspective. If we could see many, many people, many, many species all at once, we would begin to wonder, what is the deal with it? Just different arrangements for the same thing. Now my spiritual master said, it is time for me now to take you home to the spiritual world. But remember, simply, listen and observe. These are important themes, because when we listen, we take everything a little more serious. We observe, We try to see what's behind, what's going on. When we arrived there, I was totally overwhelmed. That means when we arrived now, to the spiritual world, every molecule in the form, i.e. the body that I was in, was screaming out in ecstasy. Because the other bodies we have, it's just somebody using. All of my senses were interchangeable and could perform the activities of any and all other senses. This is the nature of the soul. The physical body, one sense can perform only one activity. But the spiritual body, the actual soul, any sense can perform the activities of any other sense. Sometimes people have experience of psychedelic drugs, and they have some small kind of glimpse of that, where one sense that normally does one thing seemingly does other things also. Because the nature of the spiritual body, the soul, is like that. It's not that one is only relegated to the activities of one sensual experience based on a particular sense. So for instance, I could see with my ears and hear with my nose. I could taste things with my eyes. So in this way, the senses are performing, if you go under, senses are performing different activities according to beyond what it normally does. I could see with my ears, hear with my eyes, taste with my eyes, hear with my nose. The sensual stimulation was millions of times greater than that I had experienced in any of the previous environments. So sometimes we mention how spiritual life is not really just a matter of stopping the senses, or it's not ultimately just all about regulating the senses, but ultimately it's about now regulating, controlling the senses so that there is real freedom of sensual expression, and so that we have the genuine contact with the senses and their environments. So in that same line, we can understand that taking to this ancient wisdom, these ancient wisdom systems as given in Vedic culture, it really helps us to have greater sense pleasures and gratifications, ultimately, than we've ever had before. So it's really about how to purify the consciousness so that all of the senses are no longer stagnant, covered over, limited to the material body and material mind, but so that now the senses can have pure interaction, etc. Spiritual life is never just about austerity for austerity's sake, but the austerities and restrictions and regulations is there as a way to stop the improper thing to get prepared for the proper thing. Just like the criminal is doing the improper things, and therefore he has to go through rehabilitation or incarceration to be stopped. But the idea is that after he stopped from doing the wrong thing, then the hope is that he'll be freed sometimes now to act properly. So while we are under that incarceration, we're trying to be rehabilitated, and there's so many rules and regulations. If we follow those, then the results set in very fast. My spiritual guide and master more firmly than ever said, even though it is very difficult, please listen and observe. He was noticing that it was difficult in the other environments, but now it was even more difficult because now it wasn't just a matter of seeing some certain unusual things, but it was a matter of the soul reacting so spontaneously and so much in ecstasy with its home and environment. As the home of all living entities, the soul is in the spiritual world. But evidently, the spiritual master's desire was something special. But even though it is very different, very difficult and different, please listen and observe. I began to notice that even here, in the spiritual world, even here, the residents were also engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. However, there was no disease. In other environments, this was going on, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But if there was disease, And there was old age and death. So here there was no disease, there was no old age, there was no death. Now just reflect on that for a minute. What an environment would seem to be like, where nobody gets sick, nobody grows old, nobody dies. So, everything here seemed so meaningful. Everything was alive. Everything vibrant. Imagine now, such an environment. Where everything is alive, everything is vibrant, and nothing is going through anxieties, deterioration. Everything was full of knowledge, bliss, and eternality. Where everybody has full knowledge, you know, no lies, no lying propaganda, no deviations, no hypes, you know, no imposing, but knowledge is there. No disease. So, I mean, some of our doctors would have trouble, huh? No jobs. Holistic practitioner. Old age. Funerals would be a lot of business. Mortuary is a lot of business. And because everyone would have full knowledge, then I guess, you know, I guess librarians wouldn't have much service. References, and this, you know, everyone would know. They would all know how to process. Whatever they needed to know, they would know. And of course there would be no policemen, there would be no soldiers in a sense, because there would be no wars, and no crime. You know, one thing after another, you would see that so many of the things that get trouble in different ways would not be there. The residents were eating, but now try to listen closely to this. The residents, they were eating, but there was no hunger. So you don't want me to say, well, how do you enjoy it? How do you enjoy food if you eat and you're not hungry? Huh? But you can enjoy the eating without any of the anxieties of the hunger. You enjoy the satisfaction of taking the food stuff without feeling any lacking, so to speak. Because if you're too hungry, you get weak in some of the other things. So they were eating, but there was no hunger. They prepared wonderful foodstuffs as a service to the divine couple and each other. Stick your tongue, turn the heat down. They had no need for sleep, as they never tired or needed to rejuvenate. So imagine, you know, you ever get tired, huh? That'd be pretty far, huh? You have a lot of things done. But they slept so as to think and be with Krishna in a different expression. It's like you were with somebody in one place, you go with them to another place. So they were not limited to having to put the body to rest because it was tired or was having problems or they were sick. But it was just a way to then connect with Krishna in another level of consciousness. They had no need to mate to produce offsprings, as simply by willing they could produce if desired. Even in some of the heavenly kingdoms, they don't have to wait 9 months. Or 9 months based on their relative time. But they can produce desire. And this will help you understand a little better. And simply by a glance, all their sexual desires are fulfilled. See, if every sense, just taking the spiritual sense, the soul, every sense can perform the activities of every other sense, that means that even in terms of procreation or union is not relegated only to just the sense organs as we know of, only the gentle connection. And so just by a glance, all sexual desires can be fulfilled. However, they sometimes have union simply to serve the divine couple in another expression. They have no need to defend. To keep in mind now, there you have the material world, the reflection of the spiritual. That means things are also going on in the spiritual. But was the difference. They have no need to defend, for there is no insecurity or proprietorship. Everything belongs to everyone, as everything is for the divine couple. However, they sometimes pretend some insecurity, anger, and proprietorship, simply to enhance their service and love to the divine couple. My spiritual master said, so can reflect on those ones. I don't have time to go many more, but they're sleeping, but they have no need to sleep. They're not forced to sleep. They're sleeping is a different expression of thinking of, excuse me, and associating with Krishna. They're eating, but they're not experiencing any hunger. It's just the satisfaction of the experience. They are mating. They do not have to have the genitals come together in order to mate, to experience the union. They have union sometimes to serve the divine couple, another expression. They have no need to defend, but there is no insecurity. My spiritual master now saying, which he is ending his lessons to me, you are observing very nicely. It is not that in the transcendental pure state there are no activities. There are always activities in all of the abodes. However, it is like the difference between a sane man and an insane man. They are both active and they're conscious. Think about that now. And we're looking at the difference between transcendence and mundaneness or material and spiritual. So a sane man is there, an insane man. The insane man is also doing so much stuff, doing so many things. But no, what is the difference? They're always active in all of the abodes. It is like the difference between a sane man and an insane man. They are both active and conscious. But the insane man's consciousness is imbalanced, unfocused, and captured by illusions and temporary distortions. Therefore, the reality is upon him or her, but they have found ways to block it out and somewhat avoid it. This is what you observed when you visited all the different environments. Living entities are experiencing a form of insanity. Therefore, their lifestyles, when studied closely, are meaningless, full of limitations, impositions, and sufferings. I think you think about what people are doing constantly. Yeah. When you really look at it close, so many things are meaningless, full of all kinds of restrictions and limitations, and tremendous sufferings one is experiencing. The saddest part is that they are thinking that they are enjoying or will one day enjoy based on their future plans in this field of limitations. Their reward, regardless of what they do, is still the same. They are controlled by their senses. They are slaves to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and have an ultimate reward of disease, old age, and death. He went on to say, do you understand fully all of these things that you saw? So he took me to all these different universes, different planets. Everybody's engaged in whatever species it is, eating, sleeping, mating, defending by force. Everyone is there doing those things. They're experiencing at the end old age with disease and then later death. So he's asking, take me to the spiritual world. And I see also eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but now it's done not by force, not due to sense incarceration, not due to any need, but as an expression of love to God, as an exchange of bliss and ecstasy, done with full knowledge and bliss and understanding. And then he tries to explain to me, he explains, but I try to understand. He says it's like the difference between a sane man and insane man. Sane man, so much is going on. Insane man, so much is going on. But the insane man, his consciousness is full of illusions, bewilderment, stagnations, etc. Even though both cases, similar seeming activities are going on. Difference in consciousness. So he said, did you understand fully all of these things you saw? Especially your observations here in the spiritual world. Before I could answer, he said, of course, my beloved child, you cannot. But one day when you're able to return home to stay, everything will be totally clear. So we're trying to explain this, but can't really understand this unless it's experienced. You can have some idea. We get something that's transcendental, and it's an activity that we also perform, you see, materially. It's not easy to understand. Especially when there's no consciousness of such things in this lifetime. For now, my beloved son, let us return. But now you can be, that means return back to the mature world. But now you can be very excited, knowing that one day soon you shall also be free to live in the divine realm of transcendence, blissfully serving our divine lords, totally free of being a slave of the senses and the material environment. Soon you shall also be free from the demands. Not that one has to stop, but one is free from the demands of eating, sleeping, mating, defending for survival. Soon you shall never know old age. In the spiritual world, Krishna Loka, no one ages over 16 years of age. You know, the 16 years is a very sweet, fantastic age. You are no longer a child, but you're not an adult with responsibilities yet. And you kind of cheat it. You kind of cheat the whole world, huh? You don't know what kid, you're ready to take on some sense of being respected and being considered mature, because the body is like that. At the same time, you're not you're not being imposed upon that you have to be able to deal with so much of the maintenance. So it's like a time for maturity and fun. But that is nature, spiritual and fun. So you shall never know old age again, disease, death, either. Keep listening and observing. For the next time I take you on a voyage, we shall not be tourists, but we shall return home to our divine worship of Lordship. I am ready to take you back permanently any day, but you are not ready yet. So improve on how you listen and observe. So I could have called this listen and observe. But I think you'll understand the different points that, you know, that are being discussed. The main thing that we are taking notice of is that it's quite subtle, the difference between material and spiritual. Quite interesting in how spiritual things are not this limited or void of activity. Quite interesting how close we are to the spiritual, in that it's a matter of conversion of energy, conversion of consciousness. That things are already always happening, we're always pursuing something, we're always into different types of relationships. It's kind of wonderful in one sense, knowing that relationships are always there, but it's a matter that they're pure relationships. That one does not have to deal with the negative aspect involved in existence that we experience in trying to survive and struggle in rather hostile environments, as we are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But that these things are part also of the soul, especially since we understand that the material world is a reflection of the spiritual. And so in the spiritual realm, everything is happening, but perfectly, void of any of the limitations. We try to get you to think about some of the limitations that we now experience, and think that what it would be like if they were no longer there, and what that kind of situation would be. Hard to really to focus on such, but we can get some vague idea as we think about such. We'll take a few minutes for questions, and then we'll stop. Okay. Anyone have a question? This is lesson on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. How such is also there in the spiritual world, but for transcendental. Anyone? Can somebody sit here? So, because it has an effect on me. Maybe sit there.
So, Shankishpat, sometimes, especially in speaking in outside circles, some people, I went to this thing yesterday, I had to work, and it was in a Jewish synagogue, and he was giving also a very nice talk about Judaism and this and that, and I was thinking how it would still be so radical for them to think that there's a place in a spiritual world, people are eating there, and that God is there, and there's a relationship, and all these kind of things. So what are some of the perhaps connecting rods between that concept and just where all other religious traditions are?
It's very hard, as long as people have a conception of the Godhead. We must have some distinct connection, distinct relationship. And we understand that God is all good. Then we can then begin to start processing. He's all good. This is happening, and it's coming from Him who's all good. It has particular reasons. It has some particular connection with God here. And then one can then begin to look at things in a vast, in a greater sense. But because we have somewhat a limited conception of God, then it becomes very difficult. And so by the limited conception, they're really saying, no, God can't do that. He can't do this. He can't do that. So it's hard to do without, as long as that conception of God is, you know, it's kind of myopic. But then when you think about it, it's the most natural thing. Because if some things are going on, then how can it be outside of God? And it means there's something greater than Him. You see. It's interesting how they try to, you know, how they deal with that. And one way is just to think that it's all illusion, you know. That the ultimate is that God Himself is just energy of His void. Or that anybody is God. It's just a matter of coming in some state of awareness. But all those theories and philosophies are connected with that minimization, actually, of the Lord. And the real sense of minimization is minimizing God's mercy. The mercy factor is one of the major factors of transcendence. Anyone else?
Shrikishpad, when you spoke about the realizations and the journey that you went on, you mentioned the senses, and I was wondering, in the journey, was there examples, or was it discussed the emotions? Was there stuff like anger, jealousy? Mm-hmm. Like that?
Because see, as long as there is defending. See, one way you can describe defending is fearing. And fearing involves anger. If you're really afraid, sometimes even attack before you feel somebody's going to attack you. So, so much is there. Enviousness, it's all a part of such. Because many times we're envious of someone, or we're even angry or disturbed with someone, we feel that they have crossed over, certain boundaries in relationship to ourselves. And because we're looking at things, mine, yours, hers, his, then there's a problem. But when there's no proprietorship, no fear, then you have, no desire to have to protect, and all those things, do not exist.
You, in your book, spoke about the heavenly kingdoms and the spiritual kingdom being different, and you're with it. Like the physical beings in the heavenly kingdoms, but was it that there are no physical beings in the spiritual kingdom? You talk about the different, they are sleeping or eating. This would represent to the heavenly kingdoms and not the spiritual kingdoms.
Notice what I was saying is that even in the spiritual kingdoms, these things are going on. In the spiritual kingdoms, there's also body. But the body then is the soul that has expanded. That's the pure essence of the entity, which is the same as Krishna, as God. So what we're saying is that with that form, with that body, with that spiritual ultimate body, there's these activities that go on also. That are beyond that of the heaven. Heavenly kingdom is not the expression or interaction with the soul, but it's still with a subtle or physical body. Once we give up all of those bodies, and we're in the spiritual kingdom, And this, these are the activities that the soul is involved in. Means the soul is active, full of activity.
Yeah. I was the themes of eating, sleeping, laying, defending. I mean, it was obvious to me what those that he was addressing, or at least observing. But I couldn't help but wonder about the conditioned souls who are attempting to one degree or another to worship God while in material kingdoms, from the lowest to the highest. Is there, and I know the devotions, even like my devotions, are covered over, yet not, the prayers are real, but the effects oftentimes I'm not aware of. Maybe you could speak on that. I guess that wasn't addressed.
Sure. Every environment, there can be some pursuit of some God consciousness. It's just a matter of how much is there. But also, most importantly, that every environment, the Lord sends agents to try to help to stimulate consciousness, how low it may be. And that's the saving grace. That even in hell, there are agents of the Lord to go to hell. Any last question? I mean, in one sense, the material world that we're now living in, it's pretty hellish. Agents come here.
When you mentioned about minimizing God's mercy, it's something that I need to remember, because one of the forms of my minimizing God's mercy is sometimes I look around me and I see myself working hard and I see other people getting a lot. And it's actually God's mercy, you know, but and it's like I know the way I need to look at it is that if God gives, because I see, wow, there's some people that seem to have a lot and they're not like deserving, and I feel like I'm well deserving, you know. But what it is like that God is so merciful that even though they may not be deserving, but I'm certainly not deserving, but he gives so much. So if you could, maybe give me some helpful ways to, because that is one thing I really do, is minimize God's mercy for me.
Yeah, we should always know that Krishna's mercy is always greater than his love. So whatever somebody's situation is, whatever good thing is happening to them, is greater proportion than what they're really worthy of. And then there's different gradations about one's worthiness. Devotee always considers, you know, that they deserve much less than what Krishna gives. And we see someone else having, then we are to be appreciative of how kind the Krishna is. One of the diseases that we're saying in this mature world is, in all this mature world there was the element of disease, old age and death. But the disease manifests in different ways. One of the diseases most constant is that enviousness of God. The enviousness of God manifests in enviousness of the environment, of others. As we become less and less envious of others, then that's a sign that our love of God is actually increasing. More than we can see someone, doesn't matter who it is, if you're envious, it's like a sign our disease is still strong. We have time for two more questions.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to give me a word to help me understand my reaction to just baby disrespect.
Sure. Two things. Well, one major thing. First thing is that when someone degrades themselves by acting improper, then as we're concerned and we are loving beings, we have some disturbance that they are so much bringing themselves down. Because when a person holds anger, when they have, you know, bad mentality, so to speak, then whatever they project on someone else is so much a part of them, is eating at them. We should feel bad that somebody may have some trait that is, you know, so destructive. And as we feel bad about it, our next consideration should be what we may be doing that may be agitating someone to act so ridiculous. Then we try to look at ourselves a little closer to see what we can do to help make the situation better. Okay. Next question?
I have a
question. Okay, I'll take these two, then I'll stop. Let me take hers first.
I'm not sure that I'm going to phrase this very well, but that's a beautiful meditation. And I'm not always good at knowing authorities for what I've read, but recently I seem to recall reading a report that the ultimate sense regulation is really not just to regulate the senses, but to use the senses for Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That results in, as an offering to Krishna. So I can't ask this very well, but I have a feeling I want to ask you to tie somehow in that report with your meditation, specifically with regard to me speaking in and defending that occurs in the spiritual realm.
Yeah, I think that issue that we're discussing is that when we do things for Krishna, but not just what we want to do, but what Krishna has said and he will accept, then that becomes spiritual. And the more that we are doing that genuinely, the more spiritual that becomes. If we do that constantly genuinely, then later we can be free from the illusion of the temporariness of material body and the material world. As long as we're constantly trying to act on our own plan, then that means we're being somewhat criminals, and so we have these environments of incarceration. But as we're criminals most of the time and doing some things right, then we may be in a better prison. You know, the prison situation may improve, but we're still doing crimes from time to time. But when we're no longer in that kind of mindset, then it means now we can do so many things. We do these things based on the expressions of the soul. So that is the thing, is that there's always activity, and even in the spiritual world, there is so much activity. Not only is there so much activity, there's the real activity there. Okay, you take the next question.
Greetings, Krishna Prabhu. It's wonderful to be here today. My question relates to your children. When you notice certain of their habits that are in a negative sense, but you know that they're evolving, and somehow they are evolving, and the best thing that you can do is just to let go and give it to God, because they belong to Him anyway. But it's sometimes very hard to do that. Could you give me some guidance on that aspect?
Okay. We're going to stop here, and then what is it? Take the salad and see if the salad is ready to be served after this. Everybody has free will. Just like with all of these planets we're talking about, different bodies we're observing on this voyage, on this tour. Everyone is acting and doing different things based on their use of free will. So even those who we feel, you know, we brought into this world, our children, yes, they are part of us, and they have so many traits similar to us, chromosomes, genes, etc. Anything based on the environment that we do that they are also part of. But the same, they are individual souls, and they have their own personalities. So we can do our best in trying to set examples for them that they can be encouraged and inspired from. We can try to help to expose them to things that are healthy. We can help to walk them through, to help them to know and understand some of the things that are improper. We can do our best in creating an immediate environment as much protective stimulation for them. But then, it's up to them how they take advantage of it. But you can make a real nice, you know, dinner, and you can have invite somebody over to eat, but still they have to eat. You can sit on the table, but still they have to eat themselves. They have to eat. So we conclude there. There's always so much activity. So often we do so many things without really listening and observing our own actions as well as others. If we do this more, amazing realizations can come from that. You don't want to play into the way mundane society is, where literally less and less people are thinking. They're just performing. So much is concerned about, you know, increasing your performance. So much is concerned about managing and maintaining. About looking at what is being maintained and managed, what is really you know, most essential. And we go beyond material glance, we start thinking that all these material things, one thing may be a little better, a little this, a little that, but it's not such a big, huge difference. But when we examine those things in relationship to what we really are, we think, yes, how wonderful it would be not have to worry about crime, not have to experience old age or disease, not have to worry about enviousness, lust, you know, avariciousness, not have to pay taxes, not have to worry about voting because there's no mundane candidates trying to, you know, trying to trick you, who promise one thing and then do something later. No, not worry about scandals, any of these things. You know, once it sounds like a fairyland, a fairy tale, because it is, because the ultimate state of reality is so super real that it seems like fantasy. ISKCON found the child, his divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Siddha Bhupad, Ki Chai, A.C. Radha Sanjana, Radha Gopinath, Diki. So we'll have announcements, and then everyone should go upstairs and take prasadam. Oh, I'm sorry. One person should go out to you, the other should go up to me. See, both things are true. I mean, like the old saying, history repeats itself. So there's a lot of truth to that. But as it repeats itself in cycles. And as it repeats itself, and gradually gets worse and worse, even though it's repeating itself. So people say, oh yeah, so there was the Black Plague, and now there's the AIDS. And so it's just the same thing happening again. Well, first thing, right, even if the same thing happened again, exactly, look how grave and serious it is. Even if it's, we say, another war. So there's World War I. Okay, there's another war. So what? So look at the devastation, the amount of people who die. So just to say that if something happened again, you know, that doesn't minimize it. But even though part of that's true, a lot of things, calamities is coming about, are things that have happened in the past. But we know that in general, as the ages progress, that things get worse. We know that any material thing in time begins to deteriorate. And so it gets worse. Now the question is, if it's happening again, or if it happens worse, how does that person, you know, find himself in that midst of what's happening? So if he was there earlier, or she was there earlier, during the Black Plague, or during World War I, World War II, there would be, you know, total devastation. So that's not a way to kind of play it down, that it's something that's happened again. So this, we heard this many, many times, it's been happening before, it'll happen again. Yeah, it's happened before, and it'll happen, and even after these times, because there's always creation, I mean manifestation again, and then things go on. Anybody else got any questions? We got a little while we're here.
No passports.
No passports? Okay, let me just... One quick one.
Passenger
Wallace. Passenger Houlihan, please. Just wonder what we all here. Mm-hmm. We're not passengers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it. Before I close, anybody got any other letters?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, there's one coming.
Thank you.
today's date? I'm not here right now. With the date?
1197
with a 5-digit departure. You want to turn on that flight? Please return to D3 and check in with the agent.
Let me just go to the rest of them
and I'll be back.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, they're boarding.
Oh, are they?
Yes, no problem. Pardon? He'll give us the last meditation.
Pardon?
Whatever you ask, it'll be our last reflection.
Well, it's kind of a reflection on what Mosquito was asking about the nature of the times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in the last 30 years, so much energy and vision has come through different prophets. You know, like a,
right.
And still coming. And then there's also the fact that Sri Prabhupada came and Lord Chaitanya, he reinvents himself every 28 cycles.
Right.
So is there an opportunity now, more so than other times, to go back to the spiritual world?
Yeah. For instance, a great personality like Prabhupada who comes in from the spiritual world is rare. And so when they appear, then it's like a special door opens up to be able to go directly from here back to the spiritual kingdom. But the other thing that happens is that when there are also great powerful beings that appear, then you get the other opposite polarity. So that means then you have also very powerful, you know, sinful beings. So every time you have very, very powerful spiritual personalities, then you come to deal with that. Or let's say the other way around. Every time you have very powerful sinful entities, then there has to be powerful spiritual beings. There always has to be the spiritual is always the highest and prevails. But the choice is up to each person. And so that's why it's difficult now. You see that, you know, I mean, probably any sin you can think of is happening someplace. And the kind of stuff, you know, we talked about yesterday, I mean, you know, it's shocking. We talked on a level that we don't talk about so much.
I heard. I was thinking that
about a really funky level.
Yeah, one of the counterpoints to that I'm observing is that Krishna seems to have arranged for so many teachers to appeal to so many different levels of consciousness.
Yes, yes.
Even I myself, I can't tell people sometimes that I'm a priest.
Right.
Vaishnav priest, I'll tell him I'm a priest in the cab, so I can at least exchange some kind of divine love, some mm-hmm. kind of
exactly.
idea. And I was thinking that other prophets have come in, not to promote Krishna, but divine love in some way that elevate mm-hmm. consciousness.
I'm going to have to go. But let me just say this. This is what we're talking now about, that different levels of prophets and different levels of sinful agents also. So, you know, it's important that we understand that when we take to devotional service, that the demons, they recognize, you know, where there is chanting of the holy name, they recognize the devotees, and their desire is to try to see how to interfere. Now, given that there's been so much lying propaganda going on all over the planet. So it's like Krishna's giving different agents, different messengers, ways to sort of expose things and reveal things to be able to kind of reach out and connect with the souls that they're responsible for. So we have a wonderful chance, you know, the message that we're learning, to be able to now hold on to a deep and to see how much the Bhagavad Gita is true, how much the Bhagavatam is true. And a lot of things sometimes are very intense about, you know, some discussions. As it talks about, you know, the nature of the demonic thrust. It talks a lot about, you know, so many things about Krishna's wonderful pastimes, so many things about the fighting and going on between the demons, you know, and the demigods. So that accelerates. And so much of what happens that externally manifests is part of the process, you know, fighting or process of the conflict, you know, between the pious and the empire's forces. But as those things accelerate, according to the conscience of each individual, determines, you know, what happens to that person. Because as these things, you know, begin to manifest, and according to where people are, and they get pulled in different ways, you know, based on that. They really have to hold really deep to spiritual life, because there's going to be a lot of pulling. You know, there's so many visitors now here. And many of them are more sinful than not. There's been so many things to try to pull people in. I think they're our last poem. Yeah. You know, give you guys some flowers.
Julie Krishnamurti, the difference between Siddha Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Thank you.
Siddha is more mystic, developing the inner faculty to trying to have certain perceptions. Bhakti is more of the idea of surrender, you know, to God.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You too, huh? Maybe it's supposed to help you.
It's like Ramana's son and daughter.
Did you get
a word? Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Did you get a
word?
What's
up? The man, I never had one.
Yeah.
I guess.